From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, the Senate votes to begin debate on a bipartisan bill that will reinstate benefits for 3 months in a move the US president met with cautious optimism.
For the Americans who joined me at the White House today and millions like them who were laid off in the recession through no fault of their own, unemployment insurance has been a vital economic lifeline.
Royal suspects, we hear about the Spanish princess facing charges over corruption. We look at California's attempt to attract Latin American ideas and investment. And we head to London, where solar panel technology is striking a more musical note.
So the best we've shown in the laboratory is about a 50% enhancement in performance when we played rock music. It weren't so jiggy for classical.
That's later on FSN Reports, after a summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. The United Nations says it has begun to remove chemical weapons from Syria. The weapons are to be loaded onto ships and destroyed in international waters after authorities move them through the ongoing fighting in the civil war there. Quinn Bowman has more.
The United Nations and the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons say the first batch of chemical weapons recovered in Syria have made their way out of the country. Escorted by ships from a variety of nations, the weapons are bound for Italy, where they will be moved to a U.S. Navy ship and destroyed in international waters. Syrian authorities agreed to give up the weapons after nerve agents were used on Syrian civilians in August. The U.S. concluded the Syrian government carried out the attacks. The U.N. did not assign blame, but confirmed such weapons were used.
The U.S. Senate has agreed to move forward with a 3-month extension of benefits for the long-term unemployed, leading to praise from Barack Obama. The president said the legislation will restore help for millions struggling to find work. Washington correspondent Lorna Shattuck has details.
Speaking at an event in the East Room of the White House, the president praised the Senate's decision by 60 votes to 37 to advance legislation that will extend jobless benefits. But he also urged lawmakers to approve the proposals quickly.
If this doesn't get fixed, it will hurt about 14 million Americans over the course of this year. 5 million workers, along with 9 million of their family members.
Mr. Obama was speaking in front of a group of unemployed people who stopped receiving government support when the emergency insurance program expired just before Christmas because Congress failed to act in time. Most Republicans oppose the Senate bill because the cost of the extension, $6.4 billion, isn't offset by spending cuts elsewhere. But Democrats argue that the benefits will stimulate the economy by boosting consumer spending.
An Arctic blast is sweeping its way across North America today, with more than half of the U.S. population under wind chill warnings. The air known as a polar vortex is bringing in the coldest temperatures for decades. It's estimated that around 187 million people are being affected by the freezing temperatures. J.P. Morgan Chase has agreed to pay American prosecutors $1.7 billion to settle claims it was involved in the Bernie Madoff fraud case. Most of that money will go to repaying victims who are caught up in the massive $17 billion investment scam. The latest move in a vast corruption probe in Turkey is making waves following the dismissal of 350 police officers in the capital city. Some speculate the government-led move was a reprisal against police detaining the sons of cabinet ministers during earlier weeks of the corruption investigation. A top court says it will review the police purge. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. One of the biggest security operations in Olympic history is underway in and around the southern Russian city of Sochi in the run-up to the Winter Games. More than 30,000 soldiers and police are being put on combat alert amid fears of a terrorist attack. But the huge deployment has raised concerns about limits on free speech at the Games. From Moscow, Tom Barton has more.
The main concern is an attack by Islamist militants after twin bomb attacks just days ago killed 34 in another southern Russian city. Chechen leader Doku Umarov has urged fighters to attack the Games. Years of conflict between security forces and separatists in Russia's unstable North Caucasus region has fueled Islamist attacks. As well as fears the terrorist threat and a heavy-handed response by troops in the security zone will scare people away from Sochi, there is concern among human rights groups, including gay rights groups, that tight controls on the right to protest at the Games will mean illegal limits on free speech. Tom Barton, Moscow.
And America's trade deficit in November slipped to its lowest level in 4 years, on the back of strong exports and as weak oil prices weighed down on imports. The latest measure indicates continued strength in the country's economy. Li Ling Tan reports from New York.
The U.S. trade gap for November fell 13% to just over $34 billion U.S. dollars, the lowest since October 2009. The trade deficit was below what economists were expecting and came as exports rose by nearly a percent to a record $195 billion. Americans consumed more domestic products and lower oil prices kept petroleum imports down. The trade deficit, which is more than 12% lower than a year ago, dispelled concerns over weak fourth quarter growth and supports other economic indicators that point to a strengthening U.S. economy. Li Ling Tan, New York.
And that's the latest Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. Today, the U.S. Senate barely scraped together the 60 votes needed to advance a 3-month renewal of unemployment insurance, setting up a final vote later this week. But Republicans came out this morning demanding major changes to the Affordable Care Act as a way to pay for the $6.5 billion extension. Democrats are calling this a non-starter as they negotiate a way to extend support for the 1.3 million jobless Americans who lost their benefits in December. On Capitol Hill, Alice Ohlstein has the details.
The renewal of unemployment benefits cleared a key hurdle in Congress, but its fate is far from certain in the Senate or the House. Some Republicans say they oppose extending long-term unemployment benefits on principle, while others say they'll only support a renewal of the program if it includes provisions to cover its cost. On the Senate floor Tuesday morning, Republican leader Mitch McConnell said lawmakers should back a 1-year delay of the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate to pay for the unemployment program, a suggestion New York's Chuck Schumer and other Democrats called an obvious non-starter.
Take away the tax break for all companies that ship jobs overseas. That would actually reduce unemployment and eventually lower the cost of unemployment insurance. I think we'd have every Democrat vote for that. But I suppose that would be a non-starter for our Republican colleagues in the Senate and the House.
Some Republicans also have alternative ideas. New Hampshire's Kelly Ayotte spoke to FSN minutes after filing her own amendment, which would pay for the unemployment program by restricting which low-income Americans get the earned income tax credit.
I would hope that we can have an open debate and we could try to find a pay for.
Ayotte was one of 6 Republicans to cross the aisle Tuesday and advance the 3-month extension. But unless her amendment or a similar one is approved,
Without a pay for, I don't think I could support it.
As backroom negotiations begin on what amendments, if any, will be allowed to come up for a vote this week, Schumer and other Democrats repeatedly asserted that unemployment benefits are a good investment, whether or not they're quote-unquote paid for. They cited recent studies by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office that found extending unemployment benefits would create about 250,000 jobs and grow the country's gross domestic product. Schumer said he's willing to negotiate with Republicans going forward, but worries his party is losing ground by conceding that cuts elsewhere are necessary.
Best choice, pass it, no strings attached, get it done quickly. Second best choice, finding a reasonable pay for that can work on both sides of the aisle. I would caution people, that's a lot easier said than done. And again, as I said, I'm worried that we may be being somewhat walked into a cul-de-sac by our colleagues who don't have an intention of doing that. I don't know the answer, but that's a possibility. Worst choice, you just have competing pay-fors that no one can pay for, and we don't get this done. It hurts our economy and hurts workers.
As for the proposal to delay the individual mandate of what's commonly known as Obamacare, the Congressional Budget Office estimates this would save $35 billion, but it would leave about 11 million additional people uninsured and dramatically increase the health care premiums for everyone else. With the fate of the unemployment program currently up in the air, President Obama hosted a group of unemployed Americans from across the country at the White House Tuesday to talk about the importance of the program and pressure lawmakers to vote for it. Unemployed Connecticut resident and single mother Catherine Hackett said losing her benefits would be devastating, as she currently depends on them to cover her bare necessities.
I have cut expenses everywhere possible, and I am not just sitting home enjoying the good life. My cuts include heating my house to 58 degrees, wearing a hat and a coat to stay warm because oil is expensive. I have lost weight because food is expensive. I hope our leaders in Washington can find a solution to help families like mine.
Even if the bill clears the Senate this week, it faces trouble in the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. House Speaker John Boehner released a statement Tuesday noting the program was designed to be temporary and said the 26-week cutoff that would happen without a renewal was enough of a vital safety net for workers. Currently, more than 4 million Americans have been out of work for 27 weeks or longer. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
The United Nations says fighting in the Central African Republic is creating one of the world's worst humanitarian crises, after the population is now in desperate need of help. Violence has increased since a coup in March, with Christian and Muslim communities fighting one another. The United Nations Security Council has met to discuss the worsening situation. Our correspondent Nick Harper is at the UN headquarters in New York.
The United Nations estimates 2.2 million people in the Central African Republic, nearly half the population, now need urgent humanitarian assistance. It's a figure that's growing daily, with the number of people who fled their homes doubling to more than a million in the last month alone. Many are gathered in the capital Bangui's airport, makeshift camps, their only hope of escaping the spreading violence. Briefing the UN Security Council, the Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs, Jeffrey Feltman, said things had grown significantly worse in just the last few weeks.
The situation in the Central African Republic has greatly deteriorated since the last United Nations briefing to the Council. One in every two inhabitants of Bangui has sought refuge outside their homes. Their number is estimated at approximately 513,000, of whom 100,000 are at a makeshift camp at the airport.
It follows a coup in March when Michel Djotobie ousted the president, François Bozize, a move that created tensions between Christian and Muslim communities. Increased violence at the start of December has led to at least 750 deaths, but the UN fears the actual figure could be far higher. And Feltman said there was a risk of even more violence because of religious hatred.
The danger of escalation into sustained violence along religious lines remains real, with the potential for long-term danger to the country. This is the first time in the history of the CAR that people, on account of their religion, have felt obliged to leave the country for fear for their lives.
The UN's World Food Programme, or WFP, has scaled up its operation, but supplies are running desperately low and will be 90% depleted by February. Olivier Gandili, one of the WFP staff distributing food in the camps, says the organisation is doing what it can in difficult circumstances.
Following the conflict, WFP has responded to help. Since the start of the troubles in September, WFP has been there. WFP arrived and started distributing assistance to the people in distress, and we will continue to help until a solution is found.
Last week, the UN's head of humanitarian affairs, Valerie Amos, said the crisis in CAR was one of the worst humanitarian problems currently facing the planet.
We ended 2013 with three level three system-wide emergencies. They for Syria, Central African Republic and the Philippines. And we enter 2014 with multiple severe humanitarian crises threatening or affecting the lives of millions of people.
In December, the UN Security Council voted to send some 1,600 French troops to assist the 6,000-strong African Union force in the country. But some argue a full UN peacekeeping presence is now required. Unofficially, the UN is keen to wait and see how the joint French-AU force manages before sending in UN peacekeepers. But either way, money is needed, and needed urgently. In 2013, the UN's appeal fund for the CAR was one of its most underfunded. It's hoped a donors' conference, to be held at the start of next month in Ethiopia, will help to raise money for this extremely precarious and deteriorating situation. Nick Harper at the United Nations in New York.
$3 billion. That's how much Saudi Arabia are giving to Lebanon in the form of a military aid grant. The gift, which dwarfs Lebanon's 2012 military budget, is being viewed as a challenge to the powerful militant group Hezbollah over its role in the Syrian conflict. Christian Science Monitor's Beirut correspondent Nicholas Blandford explained to me why the deal won't go down well in Washington.
This is a deal that apparently has been negotiated between the French, the Lebanese President Michel Suleiman, and the Saudi leadership since last September. And the arrangement is that the Saudis have granted $3 billion to Lebanon to purchase weapons from France for the Lebanese army. The idea is that the Lebanese army and the French will sit down, decide what weapons and equipment and so forth that the Lebanese army wants, and then the Saudis will pay the bill directly. So there's going to be no transfer of $3 billion into Lebanese banks. The Saudis will handle the payment. Essentially, this is a big news for the Lebanese army. It's big news for Lebanon. It's certainly the largest single grant that the country's ever received, let alone just for the Lebanese army. There's a kind of a mixed reaction in Lebanon to the news. Allies of Saudi Arabia in Lebanon are extremely pleased with this announcement. They feel that this will boost the capabilities of the Lebanese army and will help undermine the argument that Hezbollah makes that it needs to keep its formidable arsenal because it's the only force strong enough in Lebanon to defend the country against possible future Israeli aggression. So the idea is that if the Saudis are willing to pay $3 billion to upgrade the Lebanese army's capabilities, there won't be such a need for Hezbollah to maintain its formidable arsenal. And for that exact reason, Hezbollah and his political allies here have eyed this donation by the Saudis with a certain amount of suspicion. There's been a guarded welcome for it in principle, but a lot of people are wondering what kind of political springs are going to come with this deal.
What role is the ongoing Syria conflict and Lebanon's involvement, Hezbollah's involvement, playing in this military aid boost?
Well, one can make the case that the Saudis, of course, are very unhappy with U.S. policy towards Syria and Iran of late. A lot of people are interpreting the fact that this deal is conditioned on the purchase of French weaponry rather than American. The Americans have supplied 70% of foreign military assistance to the Lebanese army since 2007. But the shift towards the French is seen as a kind of a snub by the Saudis towards Washington because of Washington's policies in Syria.
Nicholas Blandford in Beirut. Now, California is looking to build business ties with Latin America. The city of San Francisco wants to open a trade and investment office aimed at one of the world's healthiest and fastest growing markets. The project would follow the model of China SF, a successful public-private initiative that has already brought 20 Chinese companies to San Francisco. Latin SF's goal is to attract investment and entrepreneurship from Latin America and to build an export channel for locals to export products and services. Rebecca Bowering reports.
Relevance is a small company with a big vision. It provides contextual media advertising for video. When a user streams a TV show through the company's app, an advert will pop up at a moment relevant to the content. Its three co-founders have their roots in Panama and Mexico. And they're launching in Brazil, where telenovelas are popular with millions of viewers. CEO Stephen Clark Martin says San Francisco is the perfect location to base his business, even as it focuses on Latin America.
We have access to investors, advisors, resources, other startups that can help us taking the best ideas that survive this environment and placing them in a big pond that is Brazil allows us to operate at scale there.
San Francisco is keen to cast itself as a global gateway for international commerce. But it can be tough for Latino entrepreneurs who come to Silicon Valley, as Mexican investor Santiago Zavala knows well.
Access to capital is really, really hard, mostly because there's very few success stories. So we're having to jumpstart that part.
Zavala is attending the inaugural summit of the Latino Startup Alliance. It's the brainchild of another Relevance co-founder. Jesse Martinez wants to help Latinos in tech to network with mentors, investors, and each other.
What we look at is, how do we create these success stories that yield role models that therefore pay it forward?
Relevance may be breaking into Latin America, but there are few blueprints for U.S. businesses looking to succeed on the continent. San Francisco City Government is seeking to fill that knowledge gap. It's launching an initiative called LatinSF to offer financial, legal, and real estate support to Latino business people at home and abroad. Todd Rufo is the director of the San Francisco Office of Economic and Workforce Development.
We're going to develop a suite of services and a toolkit for Latin American firms who want to enter the San Francisco market, enter the U.S. market, and base their operations here. We think there is also an opportunity for San Francisco-made products to be sold in Latin America.
Hoping to ultimately benefit from the fast-growing Latin American market, the city's pledged $100,000 to help boost bilateral business ties and the visibility of Latino entrepreneurs. 15% of San Francisco's population is of Latin American origin, yet in Silicon Valley, less than 1% of venture-backed startups are founded by Latinos. That culture is starting to change, though, as investors increasingly see opportunities in Latino startups' sustainable business models, modest capital needs, and innovative solutions to developing world problems. Rebecca Bowring, San Francisco.
The Spanish monarchy finds itself at the centre of a corruption scandal after Princess Infanta Cristina was summoned to court to face charges of fraud and money laundering. Her husband, the Duke of Parma, is also under investigation for alleged embezzlement. It marks the first time a close relative of the king has had to appear in court over criminal charges. And for more on the story, I spoke to Madrid-based correspondent Alberto Goitra.
Well, she's one of the daughters of King Juan Carlos, and as you know, there's an ongoing actions by Judge José Castro in the Palma de Mallorca, who is inquiring about mainly the financial operations of several societies that were run by Iñaki Urdangarín being the husband of Cristina de Borbón, who is the daughter of King Juan Carlos. The judge has presented a very, very huge document. It's 227 pages of documents that apparently state very clearly the reasons why she should declare in connection with the supposed tax irregularities. But now we will see. The lawyer of Cristina de Borbón has already said that they will appeal to that call to declaration.
It's thought to be the first time a direct relative of the king will appear in court to face accusations of this nature. How does that feed into the current public feeling towards the Spanish monarchy?
The royal family in the last few years is suffering a progressive loss of popularity. I mean, no longer than 4 or 5 years ago, the El Mundo newspaper issued a poll showing that King Juan Carlos is positively estimated by 50.1% of the population, which is indeed a high score. That you have to remember that King Juan Carlos made the transition from Franco's dictatorship to Spanish modern democracy, and I mean, he has a lot of positive assets in front of the Spanish population. But obviously, all these buzz and accusations and suspicions of irregularities are eroding. It couldn't be otherwise. The image of the royal family.
Alberto, the Spanish king didn't do himself any favours in terms of popularity at home following an elephant hunting trip. He took to Africa in 2012, is that right?
Yeah, that made some kind of turning point, yeah, because you have also to consider that Spain is going through a very, very severe economic crisis. And those kind of episodes as the elephant hunting in Africa, which is obviously a very, very expensive kind of amusement, are not popular nowadays. I mean, people expect a very, very sober and austere behavior in these days that will be more or less consonant with the difficulties, with the financial problems that are experiencing millions of Spanish people. And yes, you're right. Perhaps that hunting in Africa was a turning point and the start of some of this erosion. Yes.
Madrid-based correspondent Alberto Goitra. Scientists in London have been working on developing more cost-effective solar panels. But what they've discovered is the solar cells they've designed actually work better and more efficiently when music is playing. Our UK correspondent Natalie Powell went along to see what the noise was about.
Most solar panels and solar cells today are made of silicone, which can be rather expensive to manufacture. That's why researchers at St Mary's University and Imperial College London have been experimenting with polymer material as a cheaper alternative. But polymeric materials don't generate as much power as silicone, so scientists here have found a way to enhance them, as Steve Dunn, reader in Nanoscale Materials, explains.
The backbone of our device is a little material called zinc oxide. Now that material is quite unusual in that when you bend it or stress it or put some deformation into it, it generates a local electric field. So what we've done is we've made solar cells made out of a hairbrush, effectively, a very, very fine hairbrush of these zinc oxide nanorods. And the idea is that when you stress them or bend them, they develop a little electric field, and that can then go on to change the performance of the solar cell and enhance the overall device performance.
By placing nanorods inside solar cells and making them vibrate, the device works harder. Here's Joe Briscoe, a postdoctoral research assistant with the Science Bit.
The screen is showing the energy that's being generated by the nanorods when they're vibrating. And that, inside the solar cell, is helping to increase the efficiency of the solar cell. And it actually works together with the energy generated from the sunlight to create a much greater enhancement than if you just add the two energies together separately. So the sound, the energy that the sound is being used in the solar cell to really boost the way that the solar panel transfers the energy from the sunlight.
To make these solar cells generate more power, Steve Dunn's team has been looking at the best ways of getting the nanorods vibrating.
So what we discovered was by playing music at the devices, you can actually get a reasonably significant improvement. So the best we've shown in the laboratory is about a 50% enhancement in performance when we played rock or kind of, you know, rock music. They weren't so jiggy for classical. So they like Persian funk, they like a bit of Led Zeppelin, but any classical they're not so keen on. So they're quite picky, these solar cells.
The ideas behind this technology are still in the development stages, and it's likely to be quite some time before we see them outside of the lab. But giving out good vibrations to improve the efficiency of devices like solar panels could hold the key to the future of the world's energy security, even if there's quite a bit more work to do first. Natalie Powell, London.
And that's the Tuesday edition of FSN Reports. You can tell us what you think of our programme by emailing us at reports@featurestory.com. That's reports@featurestory.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're there at Feature Story. Coming up on Wednesday, we look at why calls for clemency for whistleblower Edward Snowden are growing louder in Washington. That's Wednesday, but for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with Feature Story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.